Blog Talk Radio.
All the glory belongs to you. All the glory belongs to you, oh God. All the glory belongs to you. All the glory belongs to you, oh God. Yeah. All the glory belongs to you. All the glory belongs to you, oh God. Yeah. All the glory belongs to you. All the glory belongs to you, oh God.
Shabbat Kodesh Kol V'Yahava U'Rotzon Hin Kilanu Zikaron Le'Maaseh Bereshit Kehu Yom Tekilo Le'Mikroe Kodesh Ze Yekir Litziot Mitzrayim Kevanu Bakata Ve'atanu Kidosho Mekoho Amin Ve'Shabbat Kodesh Kol V'Ahavo Uvrotzon Hinkaltanu Baruch Atah Yahweh Mikadesh HaShabbat Blessed are you, Yahweh, our mighty one, the creator of the universe, who has sanctified us with his commandments and was pleased with us and his holy Shabbat. In love and in favor, he gave us as a heritage, a memorial of the work of creation, for it is the day beginning for holy convocation, a memorial of the Exodus from Egypt. For you chose us and sanctified us from all the nations, and your holy Shabbat with love and favor you gave us as a heritage. Blessed are you, Yahweh, who sanctifies the Shabbat. Shabbat Shalom, Mishpacha, and welcome to another Friday night session of Kol Elohim on Blog Talk, and this is Study to Show Thyself Approved unto Yahweh, and I am your brother, Ahab All, speaking with you tonight. Tonight, we are talking about the book of Habakkuk. or Kavakos, as it is pronounced in Hebrew. One of the things, family, that we all struggle with sometimes is our faith. And one of the things about faith is it takes endurance, because faith will be tested. There are times when your support of God, your support of your mighty, your support of Yahweh is going to be tried. It is going to be put to the test. It is going to take dedication. It is going to take strength sometimes to believe in a mighty one that people doubt exists, that people don't believe. Some people don't believe he exists. They believe he's a myth, just like the other pantheon of gods that they have out there, like Zeus, you know, Odin, Ra, Krishna, you know, they lump him all in that same category, you know. And at times, we are ridiculed for our belief in our mighty one. And sometimes we are offended by it. We are taken aback by the things sometimes that people say, some of the comments they make about, one, just belief in a higher being, let alone belief in the quote-unquote God of the Bible, which they feel no longer exists, belief in a book that they feel is no longer relevant, belief in practices and a lifestyle that they feel is beyond antiquated. They feel like your lifestyle is no longer relevant, you know? And then not to mention having to wade through the quagmire of all the things that people have as far as prejudices, preconceptions, and, you know, notions that about what you believe that sometimes are totally erroneous, or because of the fact that so much of what people believe is belief in Yahweh, belief in the God of the Bible, that is pure falsehood, that a lot of times you have to wade through those murky waters with people. You know, when you say whatever you are, you say, you know, I'm an Israelite, you say I'm a Bible believer, you say I'm a study of the Torah, you say whatever you call yourself, at the point where people, you know, may ask, you know, further questions, or, you know, they may, and some might ask in sincerity, and some might ask, you know, with a purpose, with other intent or other ulterior motives in mind. But, you know, when you get into these conversations and you start to explain certain things, and people say, well, isn't that this, or isn't that that, or what's the difference between this, and what's the difference between that? Because they've already got preconceived notions and prejudices about, one, you know, life as a quote-unquote person who just believes in the Bible and believes in Scripture, you know, let alone, you know, now that you're practicing something that people definitely don't understand. When you say to somebody, well, you know, I'm an Israelite, well, what is that, you know? And like one of my brothers was saying earlier this week, you know, the God that you claim that you serve in the New Testament, guess what he was? And you don't understand? You know, you don't understand. And this is something that you're totally ignorant to the fact of, that you've never taken the time. Your spirit has never led you to dig deeper. Your spirit has never led you to want to examine a little further. You know, so people have all these preconceived notions based on the major religions that are out there that are associated with the quote-unquote Bible, you know, Judaism and Christianity and all these things that, you know, they have volume of volume of volume of books to explain away or explain why they do certain things, you know, why all the wild falsehoods of the pagan worships and the false worships have been incorporated into it, you know, as my other brother said, you know, has been interwoven into all of these things. So, I mean, it's like literally going through murky waters, going through a thorn bush, going through a forest without a map sometimes, you know, when you're dealing with these folks, because this is truly something that Yahweh's Spirit has to lead you down or has to open your mind to. He has to quicken, he has to awaken you to. And then when you're awakened to it, that's when your real tests and trials begin sometimes. That's when your faith is going to be tested, because now you are becoming a part of something that at one point you'll find you. You're building a relationship with an invisible being, physically touch, but you hold on to that faith that he does exist, that he does hear you, that he does see you, that even though you can't touch him, he can touch you. And when you, you know, when you believe things like this, you know, people feel like, you know, oh, you believe in fairy tales too. You know, but we're going to see by reading in the book of Habakkuk that the struggles that we have aren't our own. The struggles that we have aren't unique. The prayers and the cries that we make to Yahweh, we're not the only ones who felt it, because he felt those things too. And it's funny, in reading this book, I saw myself. I saw the conversation that Habakkuk had with Yahweh. I remember having with him myself. And I don't think I'm the only one out there that's felt this way or had these conversations. But, you know, the wonderful thing about this book, that even though his faith was tried and he was struggling with some things and he had this conversation with Yahweh, at the end, the conclusion of the matter, which is the most beautiful part of that book, is he said, regardless of the circumstances that I am facing, I am going to have unwavering faith in you, Yahweh. And the funny thing about it is what his name means. And we're going to take a look at that, because he has, I felt, and I never, and I'll be honest, this is a book I've never really read. Never, one of my favorite verses comes out of this book, but I've never read, and it's only three chapters, and I've never read it in its entirety. I've never read it all the way through. But then once I, you know, took the opportunity to read it, I mean, Yahweh opened up some things in my mind about it that hopefully, you know, will be shared tonight. But it's a very small but powerful book, Habakkuk is. And I thought one of the most powerful things about this book is the name itself. So let's start to look at it, family. Turning, and it's one of those books that if you're using a physical Bible, you know, you usually flip past it. You tend to flip through our Bible so quickly sometimes that, you know, hey, a book in the Bible that's only 30 chapters long is not going to take up that many pages, and, you find yourself flipping back and forth. Well, it's between Nahum and it's between Zephaniah, if that helps at all. It is Habakkuk, right? And it starts off Habakkuk 1:1. Scripture says, the burden which Habakkuk the prophet did see. Okay? And when we look at that word burden, let's take a look at it in the Hebrew. And a reminder, please have your tools with you, your Bible, your concordance, and whatever other materials that you use to edify and understand the scriptures, right? And the word for burden is, in the Hebrew section of your lexicon, is Hebrews 4:8-5-3. And the word is masah, mem, shen, ayin. And it says it's from Hebrews 5:3-7-5, a burden, specifically tribute, or abstractly porterage, figuratively an utterance, chiefly a doom, especially singing, mental desire, burden, carry away, prophecy, by extension, they set song, tribute. Now, when you look at that embedded word that's in there, and I'm actually able to sit in front of a computer tonight, which is really good, because usually I have to just have my phone and my iPad there, and it makes it so much nicer. It's a primitive root, you know, to lift in a great variety of applications, literally, figuratively,
absolutely and relatively, except advance arise able to armor, suffer to, bear up, bring forth, burn, carry away, cast, contain, desire, ease, exact, exalt self, extol, fetch, forgive, furnish, further, give, go on, help, high, hold on, honorable, than an honorable man, lay, lift self, lift up, lofty, marry, magnify, needs, obtain, pardon, raise up, receive, regard, respect, set up, spare, stir up, swear, take away, take up, utterly, wear, and yield. Right? So it's funny that all those terms are used to explain what has been translated as his birth. Because, yes, in one instance, yes, it is his birth. But it's also a desire of his. When you start to read what he says, it's not just a birth, but it's also a desire of his to see something take place, a desire of his to have, a desire of his to see help or to see a certain situation take place. And we're going to read it, okay? The burden which Habakkuk the prophet did see. O Yahweh, how long shall I cry and thou wilt not hear? Even cry out unto thee of violence and thou wilt not save. I mean, you think about that now. Think about the time when you've been bent over, hunched over, been in a fetal position, crying out to Yahweh, and you feel like, how long is it going to take you to answer me? Why are you not hearing me? Why aren't you listening to me? I'm crying out to you. Why aren't you hearing me? Let's look at this verse as well. And I really like having a computer right in front of me because it makes it so much easier, family. And let's look for this word, cry. It's a very interesting word. It is actually part of, when you hear it, you know your tongue. The word is 7768, Hebrew 7768, and the word, they pronounce it as Shaba, but we know the Wav in Hebrew is pronounced with a U sound. It is Shua, a primitive root, properly to be free, but used only causatively and reflectively to halu for help, that is, freedom from some trouble, cry aloud, cry out. So he's saying, I've been yelling out to you. I've been pouring out to you. I've been hallooing. When you look at that term, halloo, it means literally, oh, 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 oh. You've ever been that grief-stricken. You've ever been that heartbroken that, you know, your cries have turned to mere whimpers to just your very being, the something of your being just releasing itself. That's what a halloo is. Right? And he says, O Yahweh, how long shall I be crying out to you and you will not hear? Even cry unto thee of violence and thou wilt not save. So he's saying, and when you look at the word violence, that word there is in Hebrew is Hamas. That means, and when you think about Hamas, if you follow politics and what takes place out there, you know, you have groups like ISIS, and Hamas is right up there with groups like ISIS. They're right up there with groups like ISIS. They're terrorists. They're people who will destroy themselves for the sake of destroying others. They don't mind blowing themselves up as long as they blow one or two of the enemy up with them. You know, so we're not just talking about, you know, some simple, you know, somebody fighting. We're talking about somebody who's willing to bring destruction. So he's saying, how long shall I be in the midst of destruction and you will not save? Habakkuk 1:3. Why dost thou show me iniquity and cause me to behold grief? For spoiling and violence are before me, and they are that raise up strife and contention. Therefore the law is slack, and judgment doth never go forth. For the wicked doth compass about the righteous, therefore wrong judgment proceedeth. So he's saying, look, this righteousness will never take place as long as the righteous are surrounded by wicked people and violent people. This is why the Torah, he's saying, this is why the Torah is slack. This is why things aren't taking place. Behold ye, Habakkuk 1:5, behold ye among the heathen, and regard and wonder marvelously, for I will work a work in your days which ye will not believe, though it be told you. For lo, I raise up the Chaldeans, that bitter and hasty nation, which shall march through the breadth of the land to possess a dwelling place, to possess the dwelling places that are not theirs. They are terrible and dreadful. Their judgment and their dignity shall proceed of themselves. Their horses also are swifter than leopards, and are more fierce than the evening wolves. And their horsemen shall spread themselves, and their horsemen shall come from afar. They shall fly as the eagle that hasteth to eat. They shall come all for violence. Their faces shall sup up as the east wind, and they shall gather the captivity of the sand. They shall scoff at the kings, and the princes shall be as a scorn unto them. They shall deride every stronghold, for they shall heap up dust and take it. Then shall his mind change, and shall pass over and offend, imputing this power unto his mighty one. So he asked now, because he's saying, like, look at all this that's happening, and you see, what are people doing? And look at what people are doing in the world. Look at as ISIS spreads, who do they contribute their campaigns to? They could contribute their campaigns to Allah as they march closer and closer and closer, and they amass more people, and as they amass more destruction, because that's what he's talking about. I'm not specifically talking about ISIS, but I'm just using ISIS as an example, because we see the works and the effects of evil men and how swift they are. He said their horses are also swifter than leopards, and are more fierce than the evening wolves. And their horsemen shall spread, and their horsemen shall come from afar. They shall fly as the eagle that hastens to eat. So you think about that. That's a prime example where it talks about their horsemen shall come from afar. Right now, ISIS is able to recruit from all over. We just had a man right here in Philadelphia who flew from the United States to whatever land they are in order for him to be what they're calling now radicalized, to the point now where he ran up to a police officer sitting in his car to shoot him. This is the sort of stuff that he's talking about. This is the type of, this is why Habakkuk is making this prayer. These are things that are going on in his midst. So even more so in our age, you know, I mean, these are the things that are going on. These are the same things that he was experiencing in his time. And the fact that they are attributing their success, they're attributing their might, they're attributing all the works that they're doing unto their God, and their God looks powerful. They believe, but every bomb that they successfully explode, with every person whose life they take, even if it's theirs, they contribute that. They attribute that as a success for Allah. They attribute that as a success to their God. So these are the same things that Habakkuk is seeing in his day. The very same things that Habakkuk is seeing this day. And one of the things, I'm sorry, I forgot to mention, I wanted to talk about was his name, Habakkuk. What does his name mean? Even though you shouldn't have your computer, you get too clicky. All right. Habakkuk's name, let's look at it. By reduplication, it's Hebrew 2265. By reduplication, Hebrew 2263, embrace. Embrace. That's what his name means, to embrace, to clasp. If you go to 2263, it's a primitive root to clasp the hand or embrace. Embrace, fold. And now when you look at, doing a little Hebrew lesson here, when you look at the root of this word, it is the chet and the bet, which means to fence the house, to guard the house, to protect the house. The Hebrew letter chet is the symbol for that is, or the what it should make you think about is a fence. That's the ancient pictographic symbol of a fence. And then when you have the bet, it is the ancient pictographic symbol for a house. You put the two together, fence the house. That's what Habakkuk's name means, to fence the house. But what he's saying right now is, I feel unprotected to Yahweh. I don't feel safeguarded. I don't feel safe, is what he's saying. Because look at everything that is happening around me. That is the case that he's building right now to Yahweh. I don't feel protected. I don't feel safe. Look at how evil is spreading. Look at how violence is spreading, and people are doing this in the name of their God. This is what he's saying in Habakkuk 1:11. Then shall his mind change, and he shall pass over and defend, imputing this, Hebrews 1:12. Art thou not from everlasting, O Yahweh, my Elohim, my Holy One? We shall not die, O Yahweh, thou hast ordained them for judgment, and O mighty Elohim, thou hast established them for correction. Thou art of purer eyes than to behold evil and canst not look on iniquity. So he's saying, wait a minute, Yahweh, your eyes are pure. How is it that you're seeing all of this taking place? You said you can't behold evil. You can't behold iniquity. This is what he's saying. Why aren't you stopping this? It's basically what he's saying. He's trying to remind him in the same way Moses would remind him about who Yahweh is and what he said in his word that he will do. And so that's why he says in 1:13, thou art of purer eyes than to behold evil and canst not look on iniquity. Wherefore lookest thou upon them that deal treacherously and holdest thy tongue when the wicked devours the man that is more righteous than he? Habakkuk 1:14, and makest men as the fishes of the sea, as the creeping things that have no ruler over them. They take up all of them with the angle. He's talking about a fishing pole. They catch them in their net and gather them in their drag. They're talking about, you know, when fishermen go out there in these big fishing boats, they have a net that's called a drag net that they just drag across the ocean and just catch how many of a fish their net can catch. So he's saying they take up all of them with the angle. They catch them in their net. That means they're trapping these people left and right. They catch them. With a fishing pole, you only catch one fish. So you got men out there that's using their fishing pole to catch one fish, but then you also have the men that are out there having these huge nets that's dragging all that they can get, all that they can get to devour. Habakkuk 1:15. They take up all of them with the angle. They catch them in their net and gather them in their drag. Therefore, they rejoice and are glad. What fisherman does not rejoice? If you go out fishing, the one thing that you know, even if it's a little itty-bitty fish, you happy you caught a fish for the time that you spent on it, let alone if you catch one of them big prize-looking fishes. Or if you go out there in the dragnet, you know, it makes me think about the movie Forrest Gump when he was going through and trying to catch a fish and came up with a whole bunch of ducks. When he finally was able to make a good catch, and that catch filled the entire boat, how happy he was when that catch filled the entire boat. That's how fishermen feel. I used to watch that show about the men that used to go out there in the North Atlantic to go out there and catch all them unclean animals for people to eat. But the point I'm trying to make is they put them traps out there and they put them fishing nets out there in hopes that when they pull them up, they will fill the boat with fish. And they go to great lengths to get this food out there in the North Atlantic. So it says, Habakkuk 1:15, they take up all of them with the angle. They catch them in their net and gather them in their drag. Therefore, they rejoice and are glad. Habakkuk 1:16, therefore they sacrifice unto their net and burn incense unto their drag, because by them their portion is fat and their meat plenteous. Shall they therefore empty their net and not spare continuously to slay the nation? So he's saying they're just devouring, they're just going through, they're just consuming. And really not even consuming, they're just catching everything that they can. They're just snatching it all up, snatching it all up, snatching it all up. You know, and this is his argument. This is what he is taking unto Yahweh. Habakkuk 2:1. I will stand upon my watch and set me upon the tower, and will watch to see what he will say unto me, and what I shall answer when I am reproved. This is what Habakkuk is. So he's basically saying, look, I laid this charge before you, Yahweh. I'm going to stand upon my watch, and I'm going to set upon my tower, and will watch to see what he will say unto me, and what I shall answer when I am reproved. And then he says in Habakkuk 2:2, and Yahweh answered me and said, write the vision and make it plain upon the table, that he may run that readeth it. For the vision is yet for an appointed time, but at the end it shall speak and not lie. This is his answer now. He's telling him, look, check this out right here. Okay, I heard everything that you had to say, and now here's my answer. And I want you to write it down, and I want you to make it plain. Don't write this in no secret code. Don't make it an encoded message. I want it to be plain. I want it so that anybody who reads it knows and understands it right off. Okay? So that when he gets it, there is no question about what is taking place. And he says in Habakkuk 2:3, for the vision is yet for an appointed time, but at the end it shall speak and not lie. Yahweh further says, though it tarry, wait for it, because it will surely come. It will not tarry. Habakkuk 2:4, behold, his soul which is lifted up is not right in him, but the just shall live by faith. You hear that? Behold, the soul which is lifted up is not upright in him, but the just shall live by faith. That means you've got to support Yahweh, is what he's saying. You got to make faith your mantra. You've got to make faith the one thing that you will hold on to. Habakkuk 2:5, yea also, because he transgresses by wine, he is a proud man, neither keepeth at home, who enlargeth his desire as hell, and is as death and cannot be satisfied, but gathereth unto him all nations, and heapeth unto him all people. Shall not all these take up a parable against him, and a taunting proverb against him, and say, woe to him that increases that which is not his, how long? And to him that ladeth himself with thick clay, shall not, this is Habakkuk 2:7, shall they not rise up suddenly that shall bite thee, and awake that shall vex thee, and thou shalt be for booties unto them? Because thou hast spoiled many nations, all the remnant of the people shall spoil thee. Talking about that man, that wicked man that Habakkuk is bringing up to Yahweh as for a charge. Because thou, back to Habakkuk 2:8, because thou hast spoiled many nations, all the remnant of the people shall spoil thee, because of men's blood, and for the violence of the land, of the city, and all that dwell therein. So as you see all this violence taking place, Yahweh is saying, there will come a time, just be patient, have faith, hold on. Don't dismay, don't worry, don't think for one second I am slack in what I said I will do. Habakkuk 2:9, woe to him that coveteth, and evil covetousness to his house, that he may set his nest on high, that he may be delivered from the power of evil. Thou hast consulted shame to thy house by cutting off many people, and hast sinned against thy soul. For the stone shall cry out of the wall, and the beam out of the timber shall answer. Woe to him that buildeth a town with blood, and establisheth a city by iniquity. So as you see all these wicked men doing the things that they're doing, as you see the blood of young men being slain in the street, whether it be by the established order, i.e. policemen, or whether it be by those who are in support of the other established order, i.e. gang violence, drug dealing, because you have the two factions out there that's destroying the same people. You know, that drug dealer that sends that young man out there to kill somebody, he's doing it to establish his mark upon the city or the little corner of that he wants to claim as his own. Same thing with the police officer. What is their cry? We need to take back the city. We need to take back the city. We need to take back the city. So as they're taking back the city, they're shedding blood in the street. You can't build a city and expect it to last like that. Now you take the flip side and you look at what these men are doing over in other parts of the world. Blowing an innocent person up, you think that's going to help you establish a city? You think that's going to, you don't think that you're going to have to answer for all the bloodshed? Whether it be by earthly hands or by spiritual hands, that's what Yahweh is telling you right now. Woe, Habakkuk, woe unto him that buildeth a town with blood. You ain't going to, you can't establish a city on sin and the shedding of blood. So all you ISIS fools that's out there, for all you foolish drug dealers that's out there, for all you police officers and city councilmen and mayors and senators and congressmen and presidents who sanction the shedding of innocent blood, what do you think is going to take place after all that bloodshed is piled up in the streets? All that innocent blood is flowing like rivers in the streets. What do you think is really going to happen? One of the things that it says in the Torah, that once blood is shed, that city has to be cleansed. The priests have to come in and cleanse the city or cleanse that area of that blood. The priests have to, the priests of Yahweh, I ain't talking about no Catholic priest, I ain't talking about no imam, I ain't talking about none other than the holy ones sanctioned by Yahweh, have to go in there and cleanse them streets up of that innocent blood that's shed. Innocent or whether it's innocent, whatever blood is shed, the priests have to come in and cleanse the area of that blood that's shed. That's very important. That's in the Torah. But then now you have men, wicked men, that feel like the only way to get their the objective made is by the shedding of blood. And it makes me think about, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, principalities and powers of darkness in high places. Well, the chief architect of this wicked system, guess what? He thought that he could establish a city by shedding blood. All these cities that he presented to Yahushua, he thought he could establish them by the shedding of blood. But in time, guess what? He's going to get his just due as well. And this is ultimately who it points to. But anyway, Habakkuk 2:13, behold, it is not of Yahweh of hosts that people shall labor in the very fire, and the people shall weary themselves for very vanity. For the earth shall be filled with the knowledge of the glory of Yahweh, as the waters cover the sea. Woe unto him that giveth his neighbor drink, that puttest thy bottle to him and makest him drunken also, that thou mayest look on their nakedness. Thou art filled with shame for glory. Drink thou also, and let thy foreskin be uncovered. The cup of Yahweh's right hand shall be turned unto thee, and shameful spewing shall be on thy glory. You hear that? The cup of Yahweh's right hand shall be turned unto thee, and shame through spoon shall be on thy glory. Spewing shall be on thy glory. For the violence of Lebanon shall cover thee, and the spoils of beasts, which made them afraid because of men's blood, and for the violence of the land, of the city, and of all that dwell therein. What profiteth the graven image that the maker thereof hath graven it? And I thought this was interesting. The molten image and a peach of lies that the maker of his work trusted therein to make dumb idols. Dumb as in they cannot speak. Just like how Habakkuk is speaking to his mighty one, they try to speak to him and he's answering back. He's saying their mighty ones, they ain't answering. They're dumb, as in not dumb as in being stupid, but dumb as in the inability to speak. 2:19. Woe unto them that saith to the wood, and I found this to be interesting. Woe unto him that saith to the wood, woe. Wait a minute. Is it that same, back to the curses, God of wood? Woe unto him that saith to the wood, awake, to the dumb stone. Whoa, wait a minute. To the dumb stone? Didn't he say we would serve God of wood and stone if we were disobedient to him? But he's telling us now, they're dumb. Woe unto him that saith to the wood, awake. To the dumb stone, arise. It shall teach. Behold, it is laid over with gold and silver, and there is no breath at all in the midst of it. So you've got all these people now in the midst praying to the God of wood, that old rugged cross, right? And you got billions of people praying to this stone, huh? Huh? You got millions of people making their Hajj, what they call the Hajj to Mecca, to march around this dumb stone. This is part of their religion. So he's speaking directly, and these are the two main factions that our people have been caught up in for hundreds of, for thousands of years. Our people have been caught up in this God of wood and this God of stone. They ain't new. Those practices aren't new. Woe unto him that saith to the wood, that old rugged cross, awake. To the dumb stone, the Kaaba stone, arise, it shall teach. Behold, it is laid over with gold and silver, and there is no breath at all in the midst of it. But Yahweh is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him. Habakkuk, the third chapter. So Yahweh basically at that point said, look, shut up. Everybody is going to be one day, every knee shall bow, every tongue will confess. But it's not the appointed time now. Be patient. I'm doing a work here. And if the work I'm doing means that I have to let the wickedness, because remember now, there was evening, there was darkness, then there was light. So the darkness is going to rule first. The darkness is going to have its time first. The darkness is going to feel like it's spreading and overtaking. But Habakkuk, can you have faith and can you hold on? So guess what he ended up having to do? After, and I found this to be a little humorous. After that, he had to write Yahweh a song. That's how humble he was. After Yahweh said his piece in that second chapter, the third chapter starts off with a prayer of Habakkuk, the prophet, upon Shigeno. And if you look at where you hear that term before, it's in the book of Psalms. The psalmist used Shigeno, and we know that the psalms are songs. They're melodies. So after that, after Yahweh shut him down, he wrote a prayer for him, a beautiful prayer for him, with a song, with a melody attached to it. And listen to what he says. O Yahweh, I have heard thy speech and was afraid. O Yahweh, revive thy work in the midst of the years. In the midst of the years, make known. In wrath, remember mercy. Okay? So he's saying, Yahweh, I'm sorry. Forgive me for what I did. I know now that I've upset you. Please, Yahweh, remember mercy. And sometimes we rail against Yahweh. And then Yahweh has to answer us back. And when Yahweh answers us back and humbles us in our heart, we need best to apologize to Yahweh and ask him for mercy. Because that's what Habakkuk did right here. Again, we're going to read 3:2 again. O Yahweh, I have heard thy speech and was afraid. O Yahweh, revive thy work in the midst of the years. In the midst of the years, make known. In wrath, remember mercy. Yahweh, don't hit me too hard for making this railing accusation against you. Habakkuk 3:3. Elohim came from Tamar, and the Holy One from the Mount. His glory covered the heavens, and the earth was full of his praise, and his brightness was as the light. He had horns coming out of his hand, and there was the hiding of his power. Before him went the pestilence, and burning coals went forth at his feet. He stood and measured the earth. Forgive me. He stood and measured the earth. He beheld and drove asunder the nations. And the everlasting mountains were scattered, and the perpetual hills did bow. His ways are everlasting. I saw the tents of Kishon in affliction, and the curtains of the land of Midian did tremble. Was Yahweh displeased against the rivers? Was thine anger against the rivers, and thy wrath against the sea, that thou didst ride upon thine horses and thy chariots of salvation? Thy bow was made quite naked, and according to the oaths of the tribes, even thy word, Salah, thou didst cleave the earth with rivers, and the mountains saw thee, and they trembled, and the overflowing of the water passed. The deep uttered his voice, and lifted up his hands on high. The sun and the moon stood still in their inhabitation. At the light of thine arrows they went, and at the shining of thy glittering spear. They didst march through the land in indignation. Thou didst thrust the heathen in anger. Thou wentest forth for the salvation of thy people, even for the salvation which thine anointed. Thou woundest the head of the house of the wicked by discovering the foundation upon the neck. Salah. Salah means pawn. So that means after each one of these things, after he had to come to some recollection, he took a pause to really reflect on the things that Yahweh has done, because that's what he's saying right here. He's reflecting on the things that he has read out of the Torah and all the writings that were left before him. And all these things he had to call to mind and sing it back to Yahweh and let him know, I understand now. Habakkuk 3:14. Thou didst carry through with his staff the head of his villages. They came out as a whirlwind to scatter me. Their rejoicing was as to devour the poor secretly. Thou didst walk through the sea with thy horses, through the heat of great waters. When I heard, my belly trembled. This is 3:16, Habakkuk 3:16. When I heard, my belly trembled. Rottenness entered into my bones, and I trembled in myself, that I might rest in the day of trouble. When he cometh up unto the people, he will invade them as his troops. And this is the conclusion. This is the part he had to come to realize, that although the fig tree shall not blossom, neither shall fruit be in the vine, the labor of the olive shall fail, and the field shall yield no meat, the flock shall be cut off from the fold, and there shall be no herd in the stalls, yet I will rejoice in Yahweh. I will joy in the Elohim of my salvation. Yahweh Elohim is my strength, and he will make my feet like hinds, and he will make me walk upon my hind places to the chief singer on my string instrument. He had to come to that conclusion that even though things may not be going the way he wants them to go, even though he may be seeing violence, he may see the wicked rise up and snuffing out the righteous here and there, seems like now that wickedness and problems are overtaking us. But we've got to hold on to faith. We've got to hold on to, we've got to support Yahweh. We've got to uphold Yahweh. This is the time now to praise him, to give up supplication. This is the time now to be more fervent in our devotion to our mighty one. We can't let them snuff us out. We can't let the problems and the things that we see around us and the things that we may be experiencing cause us now to lose our focus, to lose our hope. These are the times that think about it. There's a saying that goes, a friend in need is a friend indeed. And what that means is, when you are down and out, when you are in need, when you are destitute, when you don't have anything left, the person who comes down there to aid you in that time, that is your true friend. The one who is willing to tread it out through you with, through your rough times, that is a true friend. Not the fair weather friend that only comes around when things are good with you. That true friend is the one who's there with you through thick and through thin. And that's what Yahweh wants. See, this is why Yahweh ain't showing his hand to the whole world. Because he wants, what did he say? When I return, will I find faith in the earth? Will you still be praising me? Will you still be rejoicing? When it hits the fan, you know, there's another saying that goes, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. And these are the times that we are living in, and it's only going to get worse. You have to be able to stand. You have to be willing to praise. You have to be willing to be steadfast. You have to have that, as they say, laser focus. How much do you want it? How much do you desire it? How much are you willing to sacrifice and go through for it? And then you got a lot of people throwing in the towel. A lot of people walking away because times got a little rough for them. Because what they envisioned in their mind, just like Habakkuk, what he envisioned in his mind, wasn't taking place. So therefore, Yahweh, I can't tough this out with you, Yahweh, because I can't believe you. I don't believe you. You're not doing what I expect you to do. Hold up. Who is the creator and who is the created? As our creator, as the architect of this all, as the one who ultimately is the one in charge, it is up to us to fall in line with him, not for him to fall in line with our needs and our desires and our wants. You think he has to come down here, suffer and die? You think Yahweh really had to come down here and let his creation beat on him? Do you really think he needed to do that? He had to do that? But he's trying to teach us a valuable lesson about who he is. You see, one of the things that he said, if they smite you on one cheek, turn the other cheek. Well, guess what? They're smiting Yahweh right now. And right now, he's going to turn each cheek. Hit me again, hit me again, hit me again, hit me again. He's going to do what is impossible for some of us to do. See, this is the part that we don't understand. See, it's almost like what he said to the prophet Samuel. Oh, Samuel, hold up, Samuel. Instead of warning the judges, instead of warning to yield to Samuel's will, when they started to cry out for a king, Yahweh had to check Samuel and say, yo, check this out, Samuel. They ain't rejecting you. Get over yourself. You're just a prophet. You are just a created vessel. You are under my employ. They ain't rejecting you, brother. They're rejecting me. But see, that's the zeal we have sometimes. And that's the zeal that Samuel the prophet had. That he took it personal for Yahweh. And we should take it personal for Yahweh. But understand at the same time, don't get so hardy, don't get above yourself, don't step in front of yourself and think for one second it's about you and your will and your wants and your desires. So Samuel, don't think for one second they're rejecting you, they're rejecting me. Me, Yahweh, the mighty one. Remember me? The one who I put the word in the prophet's mouth to come to your mother and to say that she will have you, that's me. I was the one who did that. It was I who made you and formed you in the womb. So before you were even prophesied about, before you came into existence by my will, I was already having these problems with Israel. So don't think for one second they're rejecting me. They're rejecting you. You know, just like Habakkuk wants to bring up this railing accusation against Yahweh and wants to tell him how long. How long I got to wait, Yahweh? How long I got to sit down here and endure this stuff? Hey, hold up. The last I recall, this is Yahweh's planet they destroyed. So before you start asking these questions about why me, why this is going on, why you can't stop this, why you can't do this, you know, I watched a video about one brother who said the reason why he cannot believe in the God of Israel, the God of the Bible, is because of all of these atrocities that are taking place within the black community, and he ain't coming down to save them. Well, guess what? He first reached out to the black community before he reached out to any other community. Thousands of years ago, he reached out to the black community when he reached out to Israel in the midst of Egypt. That was reaching out to the black community. That was giving the black community an opportunity to have a relationship with him. And you know what the black community has continually done? Egypt, one of the black communities that he reached out to. Israel, another one of the black communities he's reached out to. You know what those black communities did to him? They told him they rejected him. They told him they didn't want him. So before you get angry with him, check your history. Check your black history. We're about to go on a Black History Month now. And I really wish people would look into that Bible and check out what the real deal is with a lot of black history. Because the Bible is black history. No offense to anybody of a diverse persuasion that may listen to this broadcast. But the Bible is about God's relationship, the one true God's relationship with the black community. And time and time and time again, the black community has showed them exactly how they feel about him. Whether they be black Egyptian, whether they be black Akkadian, whether they be black Ethiopian, whether they be Hamite, Cushite, Shemites, Yefites, okay? He's reached out to the black community. He's endured the ills of the black community and during a time when they were the most successful they have ever been in human history. He's endured the foolishness of black people. So guess what, black people? Y'all got to endure it for a little while too. As a matter of fact, he's so merciful, he endured y'all foolishness for thousands of years. He's only been punishing us for the last 400 years, truth be told. So for thousands of years, he put up with our foolishness. You know, we're about to get into the curses. And when you look at those curses, when you look at why he cursed not just Israel, but why he put a little whooping on the Egyptians too, it's because there are people in this world that are supposed to know better. Why are they supposed to know better? Because he took the time to have an interaction with them. But when y'all take the time now to totally reject him to the point where y'all just straight out worshiping the demons and the devil, don't get upset with him. Don't get upset with him. Because think, if you put that amount of effort that you're doing into studying the dark part, what more could you gain if you took that time? And people start talking about this collective mindset, this collective movement, this wave, this vibration, this universal vibration that's going to start coming over people. What do you think when that universal vibration is in opposition to the creator of the universe, what do you think is going to happen? The same thing that happens when a warm front and a cold front meet one another. It's going to be conflict. It's going to be a storm. As a matter of fact, They may rumble so hard it might be a tornado, and nothing good comes out of a tornado. Nothing but pure destruction comes out of a tornado. But that's where we're headed. Not because Yahweh wants it to be so, because man chooses to do so. So, the conclusion of the matter is stop blaming God. Stop blaming Yahweh. Stop making random accusations against us. And fall back and follow his lead and do his will. That's all he's asking. Don't make him have to deal with you in such a manner that you got to make a site, that you end up at the end of the day having to make a song like Habakkuk did. He's still guarding us. He's still protecting us. He's still watching over us. He's still doing that. But when he returns, will he find faith in the earth? Will you be faithful? Will you endure? Are you enduring right now? Is what you need to ask yourself. Are you? Family, that's going to be the conclusion of tonight's study to show thyself approved unto Yahweh. I hope everybody enjoyed this Shabbat. I hope this lesson in some way touched you and edified you in a way. I pray that the rest of your Shabbat be peaceful and Yahweh bless you and keep you. And that tomorrow you lift up your voice and praise unto your mighty one, despite whatever problems you're going through. Get up, get in, and give praise. Shalom.